episode of We Talk Comics. I am the Crown Prince of Charisma, Mo, and I am joined by the Chief Defender of the Faith, Brett.
Hello.
Got Cub Reporter K, Keith, here with us.
Hey, I'm taking a break from playing Pokemon Go to join the show.
Yeah. Well, how's that blog you were writing for us about it? How's that going?
Oh, I wrote five days worth, and then I got distracted by Pokemon Go. So I don't know. I think I'm going to finish it. It was really an experiment in whether I would get addicted to Pokemon Go, and the fact that I missed days 6 and 7 may be an indication that it's a fairly addictive game.
That you are addicted to it. All right.
day six was lost to the mists of time.
All right. Well,
evolve.
I'm sure you can probably find some flaming wall perhaps down in like in the rocks or something and go back in time and get that time back.
What the hell did he just say?
I don't even know what he just said.
All right. So anyways, the man with no nickname, Chris, he's not here this week. We've upgraded. Joe Eisma. Am I saying the last name right? Are correct.
Yes.
Excellent. Joisma, the artist of Morning Glories, is here. 2 weeks ago, we had Brett, it was his turn to pick the topic, and he wanted to talk about Morning Glories. And we went in, we talked about it quite a bit, and I'm guessing you heard that we did that show because you saw a retweet from Joe Mulvey?
Yeah, that stinker, that Joe Mulvey. Yeah, no, I did. That. I think Comicosity, yeah, the site, they promoted it, so... It was either one of them is the where I found the show. So yeah.
All I know is that that being friends with Joe, I always knew was going to kind of bite me in the ass. And
that goes for anybody that's a friend with Joe Mulvey.
Joe was like our second ever guest that we had like years ago for Scam. So we've known Joe a long time. So Joe, talking about Joe. Did you listen to the show?
Yes, I did. And it's funny. Do any of you guys ever watch Curb Your Enthusiasm with Larry David?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So I was listening to your show. I was at my day job where I do graphic design for an esports company, and I'm just listening to the show while I'm at work, and I started to have like a Larry David moment. I'm like, no.
You'd be surprised how many people tell me that they talk back to our show.
Okay, good. I don't feel like good. I'm completely crazy. But no, it's just like, because it's funny, like, you know, I've done this book, Morning Glories, for me now, it's been 7 years. The book's been on shelves for 6, but we started the development of it in the summer of 2009. So it's been a large part of my life, you know, for several years. But so I've heard like any and all kinds of critiques and, you know, under the sun about this. But like there's a couple of things I was like, oh, God, no, that's not right. So I was like, I wrote back to Comic Guys. I was like, hey, can I have a chance to come on the show and kind of respond to some of the things the guy said? And luckily, you guys were gracious enough to do that. So I'm not here to like, you know, read you guys the Riot Act or anything. But I did want to respond to some of the.
More than happy to hear when we're wrong.
Yeah. Well, like the main thing that leapt out to me was, I've drawn every issue of the series, you know, from day one, no fill-ins. That's one thing that I'm like particularly proud of because I mean, as a reader, I really kind of strongly dislike fill-in artists, even though. As an artist, I've done fill-ins on other books, so I've kind of contradicted myself, but, you know, whatever.
You also need to earn money.
Yeah, exactly. But so, like, you know, it's important to me that the book be, you know, consistent, that it has a consistent look through it. But the one thing that I don't I've never done for the book is color it. So I've never colored the book. So I know that...
Brett, that was you. Thank God it wasn't me.
Yes, yeah, like from day one, I was like, I've never colored this book. But we've actually, like, our first colors, we've had two main colors. We've had Alex Salazzo and Paul Little. We had Alex had to drop out around issue 27, which is probably, I think, right around our 5th trade, because he went blind in one of his eyes. I know that's like, sounds horrible, but I mean, it was. But I mean, he still found ways to work. He just couldn't keep up with like a regular schedule. So we had a couple of fill-in guys, and then Paul has joined the book ever since. So there's definitely a tonal shift from kind of the early run of the book to the later run, but that's really the colorists, not me. And, you know, there was I think one of the guys, you know, you mentioned Zoe's heritage, you know, that she's Indian and she isn't, like, she doesn't look Indian. And that's one thing that I'm like, I've always drawn her Indian. She's just never always been colored accurately. It's only kind of now that we've had Paul coloring the book that we've kind of gotten her skin tone right, which, you know, is really, it is on us. It's on Nick and I both for not, you know, kind of nipping that in the bud early. But, you know, one thing I'm always kind of sensitive of is I don't want people to think that, like, we're whitewashing the cast or anything. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, you know, I've always known Zoe was Indian and I've always drawn her that way. It's just, and I'm not, like, trying to pass the buck, but, you know, it's whenever you're only responsible for, like, the line art, there's only so much you can do to kind of, you know, sell that kind of look across.
No, Keith. I gotta say that was me, Joe. So I'll take as Mo and Joe. This is too bad because for three episodes I did a show called The Mojo Show with Joe Mulvey there before he left me for another podcast. The slut. And I was hoping this would lead to another Mojo show, but I'm worried now. But I did say when we were talking about it, I did say it was largely the coloring that you know, but. What are the characteristics when you say you've drawn her as East Indian? What do you say? What are those characteristics that you consider to be unique to her?
Yeah, I've always kind of seen her. You know, I mean, obviously, he's raven haired, really dark, dark eyebrows, and, you know, not necessarily like I don't see her as wearing like exotic is kind of the catch all word, and it sounds terrible in some. Not politically correct way, but, you know, yeah, I've always in my mind, like, and this came directly from Nick when we were developing the series. Like, I asked Nick, when we were designing the characters, I was like, so give me some actors and actresses that you see as these characters. And so he threw out a bunch. I think Casey we saw, or he saw as Blake Lively, who at the time was the star of Gossip Girl. Ms. Darimount, he saw as Liz Hurley. Mr. Gribbs was kind of like a really stout Vinnie Jones. For Zoe, and this is a direct, you know, from Nick, he actually said Jordana Brewster from the Fast and the Furious movies, which I know she's not Indian, but she has kind of a similar, like, look. And it's terrible, but like, just like the darker, you know, like the thicker eyebrows. I always saw Zoe as kind of not having that kind of plucked eyebrow over, you know, model look, like, the, you know, over touched up look, you know.
See if it's your turn.
Yeah.
I was going to make a joke, but it's way too late. Like,
no, actually, you know what? Please make it. I'd love it if you'd make it now.
Okay. Let me see if I can get the moment.
Okay. So start with, okay. So two old men walk into a bar.
Your future cameo appearances hinge on this, right? No.
We'll get back to that. I know you're trying to be nice, Joe, but it's okay to say we fired that guy.
Yeah, that's the thing. I always try, like, to be diplomatic about things, so I'm gonna see. On that, but yeah, so there's some disparity, and like every time that, like, you know, like Rodine, our cover artist, I mean, he does, you know, portray her, you know, her correct race, but it's kind of funny too to me, having worked on this book, like I said, for so long, and you see how like, especially with the contrast of me doing the interiors and Rodine doing the covers, it's like. Sometimes, like, I think it was our fifth trade. I saw a cover, and I really, like, whenever the covers are done, that's basically between Nick and Rodine. They kind of develop the covers together. I'm not really part of that conversation, usually just because I'm too busy juggling everything else. So I always kind of see the covers after the fact. But our fifth trade has our truant characters on it, Ian, And Vanessa and somebody else, I can't remember who it is. But anyway, I look on the cover and I'm like, who is this girl? Like, I have no idea who this girl is. And like, I go back to Matt Malikoff, who writes our back matter in the book, The Study Hall. And we just kind of discuss it back and forth. He's like, I think it's Vanessa. And I'm like, but that girl's not black. So like, I don't know. I'm like, I've drawn Vanessa as like black, you know, like from issue one. And like, you know, what Rodin drew, I mean, I know that there's different degrees of skin, you know, variation. And I know this is getting into weird territory, but I'm just like, this girl, I mean, like, we try to kind of, like, we're never like beholden to each other. Like, I'm, when we started this series, you know, it's always kind of a weird idea to, like, you know, have two artists that are associated with the book. But Nick's kind of, you know, mandate to both of us was, you know, just try and stay kind of close, but don't feel like you have to, you know, copy each other exactly. Cause I mean, I draw Jade like 180 degrees differently than he does. So, but yeah, like, it just kind of threw me for a while. I'm like, I don't know who this character is. And I felt bad about it, and I didn't want to, like, you know, really say anything. But, you know, so that was one case that I kind of could understand. So, yeah, it's one of those things that we actually got called out on this with the Zoe thing, you know, years ago. And that's, you know, that's something that I've dealt with. You know, we've had lots of praise on the book, and then we've had lots of people like, well, what is this? She's supposed to be Indian. Why isn't she, like, super white? And I'm like, I'm sorry. She wasn't supposed to be super white. That's our bad. And what's really bad is, you know, and I understand this, because when we started the book at Shadowline, the imprint to Image. And when you do a book at Shadowline, you get an editor and you have Jim Valentino, who's editor in chief. And nobody said anything. Like, I don't know. It's one of those things. I think part of it is, you know, like our first run, I think this was Nick's, I want to say maybe third Image book to get approved. Probably wasn't his third to get published. And I think we're all just like super excited and nervous to get this thing done and out. That, I mean, yeah, something's kind of, you know, so, so yeah, mea culpa, you know, we should have caught that earlier on. So there is that. I understand to people, like, you know, this isn't right. And, you know, it's right for people to call us out on it. So yeah, I'm here to like answer for that and say that's our bad. I apologize. So
did you ever have any conversations about switching it up, changing it in the trade? I mean, you've got the singles, then you've got trades, and you've got hardcovers. Like, you've
absolutely
been...
You know, actually, I did talk to Nick about that. That's so funny you bring that up. Because one of the, and this is just a really kind of semi-unrelated thing, one of the weird things that our first colors did was Casey, our lead character, he colored her eyes yellow. I don't know why they were yellow. Her eyes were always, from the design stage, supposed to be blue. And this was just another minor detail that none of us caught to like issue 5, I think. And it's like, you know, so I can understand, especially now with as many books Nick is doing and American Icons that he's ruining. But like, we were starting out back then and we didn't have anything under our belts. But I, like I said, I think we were just so excited to get this thing done and out. And, you know, I think by the time we realized it, it's like too late, but you know, we did catch it then, and we told Alex, no, you got to stop coloring our eyes yellow. And we asked him, like, why would you do this? He's like, I don't know. I just thought it looked cool. So it's like, okay, that's really weird. But yeah, so like, that's another thing. Like, so when the trade was coming out, I had serious discussions with Nick and our team at Shadowline. It's like, can we go back and fix this, like, color-wise in the trade? But that would have meant, you know, an extra round of payments to the colorist and, you know, like the whole process and possibly slowing down production on the book. So it was, you know, kind of a thing that we just kind of had to take it on the chin and just deal with it. But yeah, like Nick and I, we do talk about this every once in a while, like of totally just George Lucasing the shit out of like the first two trades or so. Like going back, like redoing so much because there's stuff that both of us just can't stand. Like for me, like, it's just difficult for me to even look at the first trade now. And that's what's unfortunate, because that's how people get hooked into the series, is that first trade. And, like, there's parts of it that I still like, but then there's parts of it I'm just like, oh, my God, I did not know what I was doing. And it's like, I don't want to look at this anymore. And it's, yeah, it's awful.
Of course, yeah, so, that's the one that's out in the world the furthest. Like, it's on Comicsology Unlimited. It's on all the other digital apps.
Yeah, so that, I mean, that's, I think you could find any artist will tell you that. I mean, they'll tell you that the earliest stuff is like the hardest for them to look at. And I mean, especially, yeah, it's true here. And I don't think, like artistically, I don't feel like the book really hit its stride till about the third trade, like starting with our third arc, the Woodrun. Like there's some moments like where it starts to kind of come together in the second, you know, arc, but like even all that stuff beforehand, I feel is just kind of like scattershot, you know, in terms of like quality and everything. And you know, it's a learning process. It was a learning curve. It was like we kind of grew into this as we went. And you know, luckily we had the audience there to support us. You know, we have great readers, great fans that, you know, allowed us to kind of find our feet as the story, you know, went on. And I know Nick, you know, at least on his side, probably felt the same way too about the story. But like for me, like, you know, whenever you're like the kind of art that I do, like I don't like my style is really influenced by animation. Like I like to do like really thin lines, kind of like influenced by like Jimmy McElvey and Adrian Alfona. Those are like two of my favorite artists. And I prefer to leave like a lot of like the lighting decisions up to the colorist, because I love, you know, really good color art. Dean White is probably one of my favorite colorists. He did like, I don't know if you guys ever read the Uncanny X-Force run from a few years ago with Rick Remender. Mm-hmm. He colored like the majority of that stuff, and it's amazing. And it's like, it's almost like the colorist becomes the second artist, like the co-artist. Just because of how much like rendering that they're doing and everything. And Alex, you know, our first colorist, he didn't start off that way. It got off to a really rocky start. But he and I kind of ended up in like really good sync, I think, starting with the third arc and then ending like around issue 25, 26, 27 when he had to leave the book. And that was really kind of a blow, because, you know, at that point you kind of get to a relationship when you're collaborating with someone where you know when you can take the lead and you need to cover all this stuff, and then you know when to pull back and like, all right, they're going to knock this part out. So I don't need to put as much, you know, rendering into this. You can look at it. I mean, you can look at the differences from our fourth trade to our first trade, just in terms of like, almost like the cinematography is what I always used to use, even though it's not film. Just like the lighting and all the depth on the characters, just like, I don't know, he really grew as an artist during, you know, in that time. And it took, you know, it just took us a few issues to kind of get going, which, you know, it sucks because you're basically playing it out on a not necessarily, I mean, I guess a national stage. I mean, you know, whoever, you know, how far your book reaches. So but that kind of actually dovetails into one of the other critiques, that one thing an artist will always kind of like rile us up is like, never want to be called lazy. And I think that word was thrown around once, and I'm like I said, I'm not like angry or anything, but I was just like, no, that's not true. I promise I'm not lazy. Cause I mean, like I wouldn't have drawn every single issue in this book. But
that guy, that goddamn Chris, I can't believe he said that.
He's like, he totally avoided this. I was like, I don't want to do this. I don't want to do
this. I'm scared.
I feel like I'm like the super nicest dude. Like, I've had people come up to me at conventions, and like, it's so funny. People will be like, you know, I gave your book a shot. And I mean, they're trying to be as nice as possible about it. And they're like, I just can't. And I know they want to just unload. I'm like, hey, you know what? It's fine. At least you tried it. You know, and then like once they kind of get that I'm a nicer person, I'm not going to chew their head off, then they know that they're free to kind of give me more of a critique. And that's totally fine. I mean, I will sit there and interact with the readers, you know, whether they really enjoyed the book or if they hated it. But it's, you know, because I mean, everything you can learn from. I mean, you learn from every critique. And I think there's value in every critique. But yeah, every artist wants to fight that perception of being lazy. So like, we do this thing in the series, and we haven't done it as much recently as we used to. But there used to be a lot of repeated panels, you know. Mm-hmm. And like, it used to make me so nervous when I would see those in the script, because I'm like, Nick, people are gonna think that I just copy and pasted and I'm being lazy. And he's like, no, it's important to the story, because we got to go revisit that stuff. We're going to like refresh everybody's memory. I'm like, okay. So, and like, you know, schedules being what they are, publication schedules being what they are, to get the book out on time, like, you know, I would have completely redrawn these scenes. And in some cases, I did. Like, if we revisited certain sequences from another character's point of view, depending on how much time we had and the context of the scene, you know, I would redraw it. But a lot of times, you know, you're kind of pressed for time, so you have to kind of go back and, you know, say, all right, you tell the colorist and the letterer, like, okay, we're reusing this panel from issue 19. And it just, you know, and that too, it kind of anchors the reader back to a familiarity point, like, okay, we're referencing this plot line, you know, like the whole Nick's favorite way of writing is this whole Claremontian style of plotting where you drop a plot point and you don't revisit it till like 2 or 3 years later. So, I mean, that's the, like, the actual real reason we've done the repeat panels. It wasn't just because, oh, I don't want to draw this. I'm just going to paste this in. So I assure you, there's none of that. There's no untowardness of me being like, oh, nobody cares. Or like, I don't care, whatever. I'm just going to copy-paste this.
Well, I think for me, the interesting element to that was the fact that, you know, when I saw it in the first few episodes, uh-huh. You know, in the first few issues, that was amongst the things that came into my head. I think as it progressed, it became more of a part of the story, and more to the point, you realize that since you are the only artist, mm-hmm. you know, doing those interiors, then it is a large volume of work, and you know, so absolutely props to you for that, in that degree. And, you know, it's totally fair. I'm glad that you kind of explained that because I think it does help, yeah. But yeah, I can see how people would connect to that because
yeah, exactly.
It kind of came up to me as well.
Yeah.
And it's something that I would say, I mean, I was kind of also along the same lines. And, you know, I think we were both talking about that when we were discussing the book earlier. But you ever have an album, though, that you bought back when people used to buy albums? And they buy an entire, you know, you buy a CD or whatever, and you get it home, and you're excited for it, and you listen to it, and you're not that blown away. And you don't listen to it again for a while, and then you listen to it again, and you like it a little more. And the more it grows on you, and it becomes one of your favorite albums. I think kind of what Morning Glories was to me.
Oh yeah, that's totally fair. I mean, I love that analogy. That's great because, like, I actually, I mean, like the, you know, people in comics, like the thing. I mean, other than comics, the stuff they geek out about. I mean, I geek out about music. I mean, like, I read music news all the time. I like follow like charts and stuff like that. I'm like really super nerdy about that stuff. So like comparing it to album, like an album like that, that's totally like that speaks to me right there. I love that. That's great. And I get that. I mean, like, you know, the people that. You know, like come to me shows and tell me that they tried the book and they didn't like it. You know, I'm always like, well, you know, I mean, that's what I hope is it's like, you know, well, you know, maybe one day you'll come back to it. I mean that, you know, or maybe not. It's, you know, I'm not going to say you must come back to it. You must give it another chance. But, you know, there is that hope that maybe, you know, it'll grow on them and, you know, they'll be like, you know, let me get this. Maybe where I was at that point, you know, I wasn't really prepared to kind of delve into this because, you know, I know how dense this narrative is. I mean, it's like I can like, just to give you guys an example of like how lost even I have gotten at some point.
I'm gonna ask you that, by the way.
Okay. All right. So we have this one instance where there's our characters we introduced, you know, in our third arc, the Truants. Like in our fourth arc, actually, it shows them kind of interacting at the school. And there's a point where Irina lures one of them down to the dungeons where you find Casey's parents at the beginning. And it's kind of like a repeat of that whole sequence. But he lures her down. I don't remember. It's been like I've been working on this book for 7 years. Anyway, like they go down there and she basically just kicks his ass. So like the dude I drew, like his name, I forget what it, I want to say Chris or I don't know, whatever it was. But anyway, so like I drew him as a friend of mine that I've known for a few years. Because I thought it'd be funny because he'd basically be getting beat up by a girl. And then gets the book. I mean, the book is ready to go to print. And Nick finally catches like, oh, actually, this is the guy from issue 8. He's one of the bullies. I'm like, what? And I go back and I look in the issue. And sure enough, the guy's name is Chris. But I'm like, how am I supposed to know this? You know, like, he was in one issue and we only know his first name. And it's like, oh, my God, are you serious? Am I going to have to redraw this? And this is another thing where he's like, no, we'll just whatever. We'll just deal with it. So, like, in terms of his story, it was supposed to be this character that had already been established. I mean, if it had been, like, somebody, like, that turned out to be, like, the headmaster or something, I think then he might have been like, no, you have to redraw it. But, yeah, so, I mean, like, there's just so many characters. And that, for me, like, when I signed on to this, like, years ago, like, I think I completely underestimated, like, how huge this cast was going to be. Like, I had no idea. Like, I, you know, he gave me the cast list, and at the time it was like maybe 10 characters at the most. I was like, man, this is the most characters I've ever drawn in a series. I don't know if I can do this. This is going to be crazy. A team book. I don't know. And man, little did I know, because I mean, I did a variant for our 27th issue, and I fit like pretty much most of like the main characters that had speaking parts up until that. I mean, it filled like an entire cover. It was like one of those old John, I mean, it was one of those old John Byrne style covers where he puts everybody on the cover. And I mean, because that's what I was thinking. I was like, man, we have so many characters now. I'm just going to do one of those. And so I did that. And it's tough. And, you know, I do feel really bad that sometimes some of the characters, they weren't distinct enough from each other. And that was one fault that I completely acknowledge, on my part, that I could have pushed harder to kind of differentiate them. Like, one that I didn't anticipate was, okay, so we have our first issue. In the very first sequence, there's the girl Akiko, and she basically is in class passing notes, and Miss Dermot takes it, and then the chalkboard blows up and all that. Never see Akiko again. And I'm like, okay, great. And so then issue 19 comes around, and Nick tells me about Irina. And she's only in the issue for like a few pages. And it's like, okay, she looks like Amanda Seyfried from that movie she was in with Justin Timberlake. She has that same haircut, that kind of like 1960s bob haircut or whatever. I don't know. I'm like, okay, great. I draw it, and then like find out like 2 issues later, oh, she's actually like a truant with Akiko, like, and they have the same hair. And I'm like, in the same scene. And I'm like, damn it. So... I'm like, I just shoot myself in the foot. I'm like, I keep trying to like hint to Nick, like, can we just like have one of them like have an accident with a electric razor or something?
Somebody goes all Sinead O'Connor.
Yeah, exactly. I was like, I'm trying here, but you know, it's like, no, we got to keep like, it's got to look consistent, because like, we're going to keep flashing back between scenes and stuff. And I'm like, oh God, no. Because if I had known, because like, this is the thing, people always say, did Nick tell you the ending? No, he did not. He is like, he used to kind of keep me like informed nebulously, like, oh yeah, like down the road this will happen and so and so. And so I used to suppose, yeah, I know a few things, but I mean, but by the time we've gotten to the point where we are now at our 50th issue, I'm like, I haven't known anywhere the book is going to go at all for like 2 or 3 years, you know. So he keeps all of it to himself. And I have no idea. I get a script, and like, it's funny. Like, I actually get the script, and I read it first as like a reader, like as a fan. I'm like, oh, what's gonna happen? And it's only after I read that, then I go back. I'm like, okay, now I actually have to work on this, and then I figure out the layouts and stuff. So it's like, yeah, if I had known Akiko and Irina were gonna be these characters, you know, then I was like, I might have tweaked some design choices. But you know, hindsight's 20/20, and I'm only kind of at this stage because, you know, we're now at our 50th issue, and like we've reached like a major endpoint for the series. You know, everybody thinks the book is ending. I mean, it is ending. Like, this volume of Morning Glories is ending, but you know, we do have this plan to do like our third season, because Nick has wanted to do like 4 or 5 kind of 25 issue seasons since the book has started. So the next season will kind of move into that Hellboy model of like a series of like maxi series or mini series. So that probably won't launch until 2017. But I mean, right now it's just like, you know, we're dealing with, you know, like, Morning Glories is done. I'm like, not really, but technically yes, but technically no. So
you get to do Morning Glories Reborn next.
Yeah, exactly. Or, yeah, Morning Glories Rebirth. Why not? Yeah.
Morning Glories point one.
Yeah. See, it's yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry.
It's just interesting when you talk about the process working with Nick, because I mean, we know another artist that worked with Nick who didn't like being handed a script and not, you know, being as involved in like back and forth. So what happened? Like, you get a script. Is that kind of the end? Is that like the communication piece between you two?
No. I mean, like, it's we used to communicate a lot more. We used to actually Skype quite a bit more right when we first started. But, you know, he got busier, I got busier. And, you know, we've just kind of, we've worked together for so long that we just kind of, we know, sort of like, it's like a relationship, you know, like it's unspoken. you know, like I get, unless there's like something like seriously that I have an issue with or a question about, then like, we'll, I mean, he's still really easy to reach on email. You know, or if there's something specific, like sometimes he sent me reference, like when we've had the Tower of Babel sequence, like all that stuff, like none of it was like, he didn't send any reference, like visual reference. What he sent were like college essays from people, dissertations and stuff. That was his reference. And I'm like, I have to read this to understand what I'm drawing. So, I mean, yeah, like sometimes, you know, he'll be a little bit more hands-on with that, but yeah, most of the time it's just like, you know, he'll send me a couple pages and, you know, it's all there. Everything I need to know is there in the script. You know, and, you know, yeah, I totally see. I'm friends with a couple of artists that have worked with him and have quit under, you know, acrimonious circumstances because they don't like working like that. And I totally understand it. And, you know, I think it's just down to like this weird ability for Nick and I to gel. It's like, you know, sometimes like, I mean, I think about like, you know, going back to music. I'm sorry, man, you brought this up. You brought music up at the record. I think about like some of the best bands, you know, like just like Guns N' Roses or, you know, the Rolling Stones or Oasis, like the volatility was part of the success. Like, you know, they didn't get along personally, but like what they produced, you know, it somehow worked. And I think that's kind of true with Nick and I. I mean, like, I don't dislike the guy and we don't hate each other and it's not an acrimonious relationship, but you know, it's definitely not like any other, you know, writer artist collaboration I've ever done. You know, it's kind of unique to itself. So yeah, it's weird, but I can see how it could rub some people the wrong way, you know.
There's a lot to take in there.
I'm thinking your story about the conventions and people coming up and talking to you about what they thought of the book. I'm just trying to imagine that happening in another job. Like, I'm trying to imagine, like, I work in marketing. I'm trying to imagine, like, just like a civilian walking in and going, I looked at your website and I didn't really like it, I'll be honest. And I'm not going to go there again. And then they leave. Like, I'm.
I know, it's weird, right? It's totally weird. Like, comics is like one of the strangest things. Like, I don't know, man. Like, I mean, I've seen all kinds of weirdness. And like, one of my best friends in comics is Nick Patera, you know, who does the Manhattan Projects and he's working on Ninja Turtles now and everything. And we used to table next to each other at conventions and he would just get so pissed at me because like, he's like, Joe, you got the cutest girl fans, man. Like they always come up to you and they're like, oh, it's Joe Eisman. And I'm like, I don't put this out here. I'm like, you know, like, coming around here with like, you know, sunglasses and paparazzi looking for like, you know, women. But
you know Joe Mulvey, that's for sure.
Yeah. Joe always gives me hell about that. I'm like, what? I just do a book, but whatever. But so like, you know, like I get it from like both like extremes, you know, I get that. And then the people like I've had like when the book first launched, I think I was at a convention here in Texas and like some dude, like I had all the variant covers for our early issues out on my table and this dude wanders up and he just like says like, what is it about schoolgirls that drives fanboys wild? And then he just like took it before I could even say anything. And I'm like, what just happened? I mean, yeah, you get some, I mean, it's, I don't know. It's like, you're right. Could you imagine somebody doing this at like at a different kind of job? I mean, I don't know. It's weird, but you know, it's great. I mean, I still love the interactions with fans, even if they are weird, because if nothing else, they're memorable. I mean, thankfully nobody's like, you know, punched me or like thrown food at me or anything yet. I mean, fingers crossed, knock on wood, but of course I now have jinxed myself and I mean, next show somebody's going to do that. But
yeah, it was the key part there, right? Yeah. The key part. I never thought about that, but this book probably does have a lot of crossover appeal to you know, female readers. I never thought about that, but I mean, it's got a large female cast. Everybody's really well developed. It's,
yeah,
you know, well, I mean, you know, yeah, that's cool.
Yeah. So, I mean, It's so funny. I mean, like the earliest indicator to me that I thought that we had something at least better than the dribble that I had worked on before, because everything I'd done before Morning Glories was like small press stuff that nobody read and probably actually really wasn't very good. And like the kind of indicator for me was like as soon as you know my wife started reading the series and she's like actually interested in like actually wanting to know more about it and asking me plot questions, I'm like, huh, my wife's never been interested in my stuff before. So I'm like, this may be something after all. And, you know, yeah, but, and we see like a lot of female readers. And I got into trouble for this because I was like, wow, you know, so many guys are like, you know, giving this book to their girlfriends and they're loving it. And like, I got like so much hate from like, what do you think? Like, you know, we had to get a man to get us into this book. I'm like, no. Oh. So like, I was like, I kind of start being careful with what I say online. But, you know, actually that kind of brings me to another point about like the art of the book was, you know, and I could totally see it early on in the book is like the way the girls are drawn. I mean, then I didn't go out into the intention of like sexualizing them. But I can definitely see that, being an interpretation of it. And I, you know, that's one thing. If, like I said, Nick and I ever went and George Lucas the book, I would probably go back and change like their attire and vary the body shapes a little bit more. Cause you know, like I said, you know, you're learning as you go. And that's one of those things, like if you, you know, you have like regrets or whatever, things you wish you could go back and change. That's one thing that I would do. But I did always try to make like an effort, at least with like with Jade, was to kind of portray her as a little bit more petite as opposed to Casey and Zoe, who were a little bit more developed. And then we had Maggie. I was really pleased when Nick introduced this character, Maggie, during the wood run. She was like, you know, a more like a plus size shape, and then Nick kills her at the end of the issue. Like, are you kidding? Yeah. Seriously,
you need a spin-off miniseries that takes place in the middle of that issue.
Just... yeah, yeah, that's what we should do. Yeah, and it was just like that'll be the point series, like that'll be like 17.1, 0.2, 0.3, whatever. Yeah. but yeah, so like I actually, you know, I took this because like there was one day that it was on Twitter, and I started getting raked over the coals by somebody for being like sexist because of the way I drew the girls in the book. And I was like, whoa, like what? This came out of nowhere. And so it's one of those things, like, you know, it makes you kind of confront your art. I'm like, wow, what am I really doing that? And you look at it and you're like, okay, dang, I could see how they think that. So I've actually, you know, actually as the series went on, I tried to make an effort to kind of, I mean, I know they're still teenagers, so they're not all going to be like, and I'm not going to go in and draw them like, you know, looking like they're, you know, costumed adventurers or whatever. Like they have varied body shapes, and some of them are scrawnier, some of them are thicker than others. And like, that's something that I've definitely made a conscious effort to try to do, is like to vary the body shapes. And like a lot of girls, it was really funny to me. Like I would get these girls like, Joey, love the book. Could you make the skirts a little longer? I'm like, oh God, I'm sorry. Yes, I will.
That's so. Kind of that would be the Spielberg version to like lower the skirts a couple of times.
Yeah.
Get rid of all the guns are replaced by CBs, and the skirts are 2 inches longer.
In there instead of the guns, you know. But yeah, I mean, like it's overall it's been a great, you know, run. But it's like I look at especially the first 25 issues or so. It's like just like. Like my education in comics, like that's almost like boot camp in a way. It was a learning curve, and there's some parts of it that, you know, like Nick and I both would love to redo, but you know, you live with it and you hope for the best, and you hope that people will stick with it to get to the stuff you think is actually really good. So but yeah, I mean, it's just one of those things, like I said, like I had like an LD moment, a Larry David moment. I'm like, no, I'm not lazy. I swear.
Well, it's interesting because you can't, you know, you can't just say, oh, well, it's fine. Jump on issue 25. That just doesn't work.
Yeah. No, this is one of those series. And like, it amazes me. Like, we do not follow that, what was it? The Gym Shooter mandate, which is, you know, every issue is supposed to be somebody's first issue. I mean, there's no way somebody could pick up issues like 42 of this series and know what was going on. And I hate that. And one thing that, you know, we usually have this panel at New York Comic Con every year for Morning Glories. every year somebody on that panel will ask Nick, like, please put a recap page in. And he always hems and haws about it. He will not do it. And I'm like, why?
Just a link to the Wikipedia site, maybe.
Yeah.
You can handle that in a page.
Well, it would work in the paper if you could just touch it. You know, be like, okay, it's Spain. Oh, that's the backstory. But yeah, like, you won't even put the recap page in. And, like, it bugs me. I'm like, dude, like, you don't even have to write, like, you know, a really long one. Just, you know, do the bullet points of what's happened so far. And, like I said before, our back matter guy, Mac Malikoff, he's offered to write it, but Nick is just so hands-on about it. He's like, no, I want to, you know, if there's going to be one, I'm going to write it, but there's not going to be one. It's like, what the hell, man, really? That was another thing we did for a while. We had on our interior front cover was I made these little headshots of all the characters, and I told our designers, like, I want you to put these in here, like, for every character, because I tried to do them for every character. And I was like, so whenever we do an issue, like, if we're doing an issue that just has, like, Miss Hodge and Mr. Gribbs and Casey, I just want those three in there. And, you know, put their pictures and their names so people know, because, you know, you're not always going to, you know who they are issue to issue. And I'm like, we did that, I think, I don't know how long it lasted, but it didn't last that long. And that was one that really chapped, you know, my hide. I'm like, you know, we had this thing, and as a reader, I love stuff like that just because, you know, for one, I mean, I just like looking at stuff like that, but also it helps kind of, you know, help you clarify things like, okay, who is this guy? Let me flip to the front. Oh, there's his picture. That's who that is. You know, I think stuff like that would have been helpful, but.
We had actually talked about that probably, I think, in an episode or two before we were talking about Morning Glories, about how we really needed that sometimes. And yeah, that was almost an art to that.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I mean, I love that. And I, you know, Image doesn't do this, but I mean, I loved that whole thing, you know, in the Marvel comics in the 80s on the little box, you know, with the little headshots, you know, on the cover and everything, you know, so you know who, you knew who was going to be in the issue, you know, the Avengers, their lineup was always kind of changing or whatever. So like, you knew based on that box, like, you know, like, Stingray's in this issue. I don't want this one. Toss it back. There's your deep cut for you, man. Stingray. Yeah, so I mean, it's one of those things, like, I think if we, you know, when we do come back for our third season, you know, in whatever format, like, I'm more of a mindset to really push for these things. And because we, you know, our previous mindset was, especially in our second kind of season, you know, this is when Nick's Marvel workload started to kind of pile up, and our scripts got, you know, kind of pushed down in terms of priority. So, you know, we kind of were like, you know, we just need to get this done and out, because if we kind of, you know, belabor it too much, you know, then, you know, it'll delay it even more. And, you know, it's like a domino effect. Comics is, I mean, like, if one guy's late, I mean, everybody else is going to be late. So, you know, part of what I've had to do is kind of, you know, learn to kind of make up time. And it's not, I'm not trying to like talk trash about Nick, but I mean, that's just, it's simple, you know, truth is the fact that, you know, and he would admit to it too, that he's late on scripts. So I'm like, okay, so I don't want to, cause I want our colorist and I want our letterer to get paid. So I want to get this stuff done so they can get paid. So it's a vicious cycle sometimes, but my mindset going forward is like, you know, we're going to get this done. We're going to get it done right. You know?
And then afterwards, you can, once all 100 issues are out or whatever, you could remaster the whole thing.
Yes.
I have to admit, I didn't know George Lucasing was a verb until I had this conversation with you. So,
yeah. But it makes sense, though. It does.
Put some extra characters in the background, and we're gonna totally remove the job.
Oh,
of the
dear God, Joe, you don't need extra characters in the background.
I know. we'll do the opposite. We'll just remove characters.
Yeah. Actually, can you do like director's commentaries for each of the issue?
You know, actually, we did this. We did for a while on Multiversity Comics. We used to do a podcast like every time like one of our hardcovers would come out. I think it was our hardcovers. We would go through like the 12 issues that would be in there, and we would do like, or maybe it was every trade. I don't know, because I don't think we did 12-hour shows, but we tried to break it up, and like we did them like they did Nick individually, then they did me individually, then we tried to just do them both together. And that took like an entire day to do like a single trade, I think. So it just ended up taking way too much time. So we just stopped doing it. But I liked doing that, and it was fun. And I think our readers actually liked it because, you know, it is basically like a director's commentary on the issues. And I mean, as a film, you know, fan too, I mean, I love those, you know, from when I'm, because I put movies on while I'm drawing. I mean, if I've already seen the movie like 100 times, I'll put the commentary on and just listen to it. And it's great. It's really fun. So yeah, I'd love to do more stuff, you know, more stuff like that.
It's interesting because I was going to ask you about what music you listen to while you draw, being such a big music fan.
Yeah, no, I listen. Yeah, I mean, like I said, I'm a music nut, so I mean, I listen to music, but I mean, I'll put movies on too if I just like get tired of my collection because I'm kind of like scrolling through my or hitting shuffle all the time on my player. Like, oh no, heard that one recently. I mean, I'll listen to anything under the sun as long as it's not country. I mean, that's really the only thing I don't like is country music.
The guy from Texas.
Yeah, exactly. Which, you know, my wife loves country music, so like anytime we were in the car, it's like, you know, whoever's car we're in, you know, they control the music. So like, we're in her car, and it's like, if we're with the kids, you know, listen to their music, which is, you know, hair pulling enough on its own. But then, you know, if it's just her and I or whatever, and she puts on the country music, and I'm just like, okay, I'm going to tolerate this. I know she's probably the same way with my music, but yeah, like, I don't know. I mean, yeah, I grew up in, I'm from Texas. I grew up here. I cannot stand country music, I guess, because, yeah, I've heard it my entire life, and it's just, it just personifies redneck to me, and I just can't stand it. But, you know, I listen to like a lot of like electronic music, and metal. I love metal. And like, you know, indie music or, you know, just whatever, you know, alternative, whatever they call it now. Hell, I don't know. Indie alternative, whatever. So I have a pretty, I mean, like, I've got like an Apple Music membership, and like I thought that I was going to cap out my song list. I'm still uploading music to my cloud or whatever, and I'm like, I haven't capped it out yet, but I mean, I've got a ton of MP3s, so yeah.
Well, you know, you should just come on. We'll do a music show. We already do a music show, but you'll just have to come on and be a guest and.
Yeah. No, I'd love to. I'd love to talk music. I mean, you know, like I said, I'm always, you know, following different bands and everything. I just read the other day and I was like super excited. I found out about it. Like, I was a really big Oasis fan back in the day, and I found they're remastering one of their albums and they're like doing like a deluxe edition with like bonus tracks. I'm like, okay, I gotta go add that, and I gotta go get this and this and this. So yeah, I totally, like I said, I nerd out about this stuff.
And of course, you listen to the We Talk Comics podcast also while you're
working. Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah. Podcasts all the time. Well, yes.
There's 200 plus of them. I mean,
well, you know, like, when I'm at my day job, like, actually, I do put on podcasts a lot. I mean, I listen to you guys, and Stuff You Should Know is another one of my favorites because it's just, I mean, like, just random stuff. So, because that breaks up the monotony of just like constantly shuffling through my music. I'm like, well, you know, I mean, I want to actually hear people talking about something instead of just, you know, songs. So, yeah, podcasts are, you know, always great. I don't always put those on when I'm drawing because I'll start, you know, listening to them and I'll be drawing, and then I'll find I'm not drawing. I'm actually like listening more and like,
you know, I'm not lazy, you mother.
Yeah.
Yeah. No. Actually, I got to ask what's because we're metal guys, especially me and Brett there. What metal bands are you into?
Well, my all-time favorite band is probably Black Sabbath. I love them. I was really into thrash metal for years, Slayer, Testament, Forbidden, Violence. I love those guys. And then like into like Machine Head. I'm trying to think of, I have like so many bands that I've, seen. I saw, when I was younger, I'm kind of embarrassed how many times I saw Metallica, but, I saw them when they did their set that had their acoustic set in the middle, and I think that was the last time I saw them in concert because I was just like, I'm kind of done. Like, they're doing acoustic now. No,
they're a great concert. I've seen them three times, and you know, I mean, it's unfortunate for us. We don't necessarily get all the big concerts coming up here, so we probably miss out. We do miss out on a lot of things. And I know that Mo and I would be at a lot more concerts if we lived in a major center in the U.S.
Yeah, I mean, I stopped going for a while, and I went a couple years ago. It wasn't a metal band. It was Sleigh Bells, you know, this kind of alternative band. And I went with a friend of mine to that, and it was like my first show, and I think 5 or 6 years, because I mean, I became a dad, and you know, like I was just like, okay, I'm an adult, I'm too old for this stuff. And if I go to concerts, it'll probably be when I take my son to whatever crappy music he's into. You know? But like, I ended up going to this show in Dallas, Sleigh Bells, and just really enjoyed it. I'm like, man, I really missed this. I want to go back and do more shows within like another 2 or 3 years before I went to another show. So part of it is like a lot of the bands here, they like to tour here in the summer, and I mean, Texas is like the seventh layer of hell in the summer, and I hate going to like the outdoor festivals or outdoor shows here. And it's like, you know, any metal band or whatever that comes through and be like, they're playing at our like local, you know, kind of Starplex arena type thing, and it's outdoors. I'm like, nope, I'm not going. I mean, I'd love to see them, but I'm not gonna go stand in 102 degree, you know, weather. Yeah, but I mean, we do have some pretty decent, you know, indoor music venues here, and part of it is it's just like so many of my friends up here, just they're not really into metal, so I've never had anybody to go to metal shows with. But like, you know, it's funny, like my kids going to school, like I've met other parents and like, oh no, I love metal too. I'm like, oh, finally, I have someone I can go to metal shows with. So.
Maybe I was thinking maybe you want to move to Calgary. You know, we could hang and.
if the weather's not like 102 degrees, then yeah,
it's not. You don't have to worry about that.
No. Well, it's like,
if I knew what 102 degrees is, because I don't.
Oh, but, you guys on the Celsius?
Yes, that's right.
Yeah, I know it's 102 Celsius. Then we'd be in really big trouble.
Well. It's funny because, like, you know, I know up north it's, like, so much better. And it's funny because, like, I've done some shows, like, up in the Pacific Northwest and then in New England and everything. And I'm actually going to Boston Comic-Con in a couple of weeks. And I love doing the shows up there. What?
Probably see Joe Mulvey up there, though.
So you Joe Mulvey is going to be my roommate in Boston.
Oh, you gotta look out. Oh.
Yeah.
All right. Well, don't let him take you to see strippers. I mean, that's basically all that guy does.
Yeah. Well, he asked me, he's like, hey, can I crash in your room? I'm like, oh, I guess. no. But like, yeah, like I'll go to these shows, like, you know, up north, and I'm like, oh my God, I'll get off the plane and like the weather is just so much more mild. I'm like, I love it here. I want to move here. And then like my friends that live there is like, you know, come here during the winter and then say that. And I'm like, oh, okay. Yeah. Well, come to Texas during the summer and see what, you know, I don't know. But yeah, no, it should be fun. Yeah, I'm looking forward to Boston. I actually look forward to seeing Joe because I actually have a really good time with Joe when we hang out. Like I actually go to his house during New York Comic Con. He and his family, like they let me and my buddies stay at his house before the show starts. And then we go into the city and have the convention, and I don't see Joe for like 4 days. Until the end of the convention, and he's usually staggering into a cab, you know. So,
yeah, to the strip club, yeah.
Yeah, pretty much.
I mean, tell me say hi, but only if he seems like he's in a good mood.
Oh, okay. Well, I'll end my time here with a little anecdote about Joe. One New York Comic Con, actually, we were staying in a hotel like a few blocks down from the Javits Center, and. We had booked a room that had supposed to have two like full beds or whatever, and we get in there and of course it's like one king size bed, and it's me and Joe and another guy, and we're like, we're not all going to cram into this bed. And it's like 3 in the morning and we've all been out drinking, and Joe of course is very lit, but he goes downstairs to the front desk. And yeah, we'd actually asked for a rollaway bed before we left. And like, yeah, of course, we'll get it. And of course, we get up there and it's not there. So Joe goes downstairs and proceeds to just tear this guy at the front desk up a new one. You know, and the guy wasn't going to do anything. He was like, I'm sorry, you know, we said we were going to do it, but I mean, I don't know, it's out of my hands. And Joe pulls this stuff that, you know, well, actually, I work for hotels.com and I'm a TripAdvisor, and I'm going to give you guys a bad review, and I'm going to tell my boss that you guys. And like, he came up with this whole elaborate story. And within 5 minutes, we had that bed. So,
Joel Mulvey ran a scam.
Yeah, exactly. He ran a scam. So, this is what it's like with Joe Mulvey. It's great. And like, actually, on He'll love me telling you guys all this. But on the way back to our hotel that night, I mean, he peed in the street. So, you know, he's a charmer. I love him. He's great. He's like, he's actually probably my favorite person to hang out with during comic conventions. Because, I mean, I guess I say that now until one of us gets arrested or both of us, you know, and then my opinion might change. But for now, actually, he's probably my favorite person to hang out with. So, yeah. But anyway, I wanted to thank you guys for letting me come on and like respond to your criticisms. And like I said, I hope I didn't scare your friend. I didn't. It wasn't my intention.
No. We were talking beforehand. We're like, well, we won't actually name the show until after it's over, because if he comes on and just starts screaming at us for being idiots, it'll be, you know, like, we didn't know what to expect.
Never.
Right? We didn't know what to expect. But no, this was an absolute pleasure. Absolutely.
But now we got to ask about the cameo appearances in the book, right?
Oh, yeah.
He's already being in. He's unnamed or unnamed doctor or something.
I have a cameo in 45. I'm willing to return, though. I mean, I don't think the doctor got quite enough screen time, I'll be honest.
Oh, and Nicky might.
Exactly.
I'm at this point, it could be a miniseries later.
Yeah,
I'm in four panels, so we'll
spin you off into your own series. That'll be when we do the point series, the, you know, season 3.1.1.2 and all that. That's what it'll be.
And then Keith, you're gonna need to get a piece of that.
Yeah, that's surprising to me that, you know, I put this thing in for cameos for like a couple years ago, and I mean, it just blew up. I mean, I got like 500 emails from people that wanted cameos in the book, and I was flattered, but it still just kind of blew me away. And like, people are still, you know, they want in on this, and I'm like, I'm still getting to these ones from like 2 years ago. So yeah, and I feel bad like skipping people ahead, because I'm like, well, these people emailed me first, I should kind of go in order that I got them. So.
But did they let you come on their podcast?
I don't think so. Yeah, okay. Negotiating there.
I think my picture, I don't know if you can see it, the picture on my butt is actually a picture of Joe Mulvey drew of me being chased by a zombie Shakespeare. That's my picture on the Skype there.
I was wondering what that was. I kept looking at it. It's like, it's art of some kind.
Yes, it's a little blurry.
That's what people say a lot about Joe Mulvey stuff.
Poor Joe. Now he's going to want to come on your show and defend
himself. Oh, probably.
All right, only if you come on as well.
All right,
yeah,
deal.
Yeah,
so we'll do the Mo, the Joe, and the Joe.
All right. Then you can do that. That sounds good.
And you guys could just sit in the back and be entertained.
That's right. It's all fun and games from that point, right?
Yeah, but no. If you ever do need a really fat old guy in your book, I'll be happy to be in there. You bet.
Okay.
Yeah, we'll help you up with those body types.
You need some fat, more fat in your book than you need these three.
Well, like a lot of times. Well, like a lot of times, people send me photos of themselves and they want a cameo in the book, and they'll be like, you know, they'll have the full beard, and I'm like, you realize, like, it's a school, and these are kids, right? Like, there's no students that go around with beards. So, like, instead of asking them, you know, can you send me a pic without your beard, I usually just make them security guards or faculty instead. So.
Well, it was funny when my issue came out. The guys were kind of razzing me, like, "Yeah, it doesn't look that much like you." I'm like, "He's not a caricature artist from the Boardwalk." Like,
thank you. At least I'm not that close.
It looks like the picture I sent him is what it looks like.
Brett, you said he looked like the, what's his name from a Big Bang Theory? That was who you compared it to?
Oh, yes, Johnny Galecki. Yeah.
That's fair.
Yeah.
In fairness,
if you saw Keith in person, you'd think, well, he's a spitting image of Johnny Galecki.
Okay, fair enough.
But, I mean, in fairness, we just like wrestling Keith, so really, yeah, that's true. Could have been anybody.
Really, they say enough bad things about me, Joe. I come on every week to talk about what they said about me.
Oh, nice.
Right. I think we're probably, Brett, the air horn is pretty close.
Yes, the air horn can be pretty close.
Yeah. All right. Well, then I will take this time to we're going to end this show. We'll give you a chance, Joe, to plug everything again. So I'll just let's say to everybody, you can find us at WeTalkPodcast.com and all over the damn internet, Comicosity and iTunes and TuneIn and Google Music and Twitter, Facebook, all that crap.
So, yeah, we're everywhere. And next week's topic, I get to pick it. So I don't know. Maybe you will want to come back on for this. He got a shout out a little bit earlier. Next week, we're going to be talking some John.
There you go.
I was already wrapping it up. It wasn't.
I just wanted to be a douchebag.
Perfect. Mission accomplished again. Next week, we're going to be talking some John Byrne.
Oh, next man.
You're free to come on, Joe.
we'll see. That would be cool.
Standing invitation for you.
Nice.
Everybody's going to bring your top four favorite John Byrne stories. You can put them in order or not, but your top four favorite. I'm expecting some crossover, but we're going to talk some favorite John Byrne stories. So that'll be next week's topic, and we'll see if that goes an hour.
Nice.
Oh, yeah. Actually, Joe, here's what you can do. You can email us your favorite John Byrne stories, and we'll read them on the air.
Okay. Can't come on. I prefer you come on to those other two.
Absolutely. That is the preference.
That is the preferred thing. But next week will be some John Byrne. I think we'll call it Byrne Before Reading.
Oh, boom. Very nice.
That'll be the title of next week's show, Byrne Before Reading. All right. So, Joe, please, floor is yours.
You can find me online, all the various social networks. My Twitter is twitter.com/SupaJoe, SupaJoe. That's also my Facebook, facebook.com/SupaJoe, Instagram. I'm always posting art on those. I have a Patreon page. Please check it out. It's patreon.com/SupaJoe. I have an exclusive Morning Glories comic on that one, and I'm always posting exclusive art to that and stuff from my archives. And yeah, that's basically it.
Thanks, Joe. Well, we had a blast.
We totally did. You were a lot of fun.
Well, thank you guys. I appreciate it.
You didn't swear at us at all, really.
No, I wasn't gonna swear at you. But like, I appreciate it. Like I said, I didn't give you like, oh my god, he's gonna yell at us. That's not what I was ever, not my plan at all.
So. I didn't have that feeling, but the other two didn't know. Because I had been the one who was talking to you in the email, so they were like, I was like, no, I can see this guy's not, but the other guys are like, oh, he wants to come on. Really. Like we're always surprised when we open our big fat mouths and somebody hears it. Like we've been doing this for 5 years and we have lots of listeners, but the idea that it would reach, the people doing the books is a very strange thing. So.
You guys have been great. I really appreciate it. And yeah, like I said, I mean, I'll be listening, but I mean, I'll have to think about my favorite John Byrne stuff. And if you guys like, if you ever do like a music episode too, like a metal episode, I might be interested in that.
Well, we talk to a lot of, we do talk to a fair number of metal folk as well.
Cool.
So if there's anybody, if there's anybody that you really love, you let us know. We'll try to hook them up.
Awesome. So
was musicians the word you were looking for there, Brett?
No, that was folk. I was going for it. That was it.
Folk?
Yes.
Sheesh. That's why we only do an hour, Joe.
There we go. It's like the Tin Man and other metal folk.
It's crash and burn from here. Morning Glories. Buy it.
Hey, thanks again, guys. I'm going to run, and I really appreciate it. And like, tweet at me a link whenever it's out, and I'll tweet it out and all that stuff.
Sounds good. So,
all right. Joe. Take it easy, guys.
You too.
Bye.
Are we OUT now?
We are OUT. I forgot to say it this time for the first time ever.
OUT with a BANG? Yeah.